I'm Jamie. Welcome to Driver Picks the Podcast.
Where I pick the podcast.
And I shut my cake.
And today we are discussing episode 6. No, that's wrong. Season 6, episode 16, ... and then there were none. Jamie, what did you think?
I don't know how to feel about this episode.
That was so fair.
It was a wild one. I just want to say a big thank you to Sarah Gamble at the start of this episode. She finally killed off the Campbells. We're done with them. They're dead now. I don't have to deal with them again. Hopefully. Knock on wood. Like, they could find a way to fucking pull them back again, but like, and then they were none was referring to the Campbells, and I'm so grateful for that.
Literally, okay. I think that, very quickly, I just want to touch base. It was written by Brett Matthews, directed by Mike Rohl.
Yeah.
They're names that we recognize, but they're not like huge, like we know them. They've written other episodes. They've directed other episodes, but they're not Ben Edlund. They're not future showrunners. They're not writers that we have particular theories or anything strongly surrounded about. So I just wanted to sort of touch base and get out of the way because I do think one of the first things we have to talk about is the issues inherent with this episode.
Yeah.
So obviously, like you said, like the Campbells, their storyline is done, which honestly, thank fuck. Because yeah, like I genuinely think that at this point they were like, wow, that wasn't well received.
My literal note about this one is from the scene where, like, Sam shoots Samuel. Actually, no. I think it was actually the scene where Dean shoots Gwen. Mm-hmm. Because I support gay rights and gay wrongs because it means this storyline is over. I don't love it because a woman died, but...
Yes. I think, personally, that Samuel's death made sense because... He is portrayed as a villain through this season, and so, like, his death doesn't feel like it is out of place.
Yeah.
Gwen's death, however, feels like the death of a civilian, more so than I think anything else. And so, I also think it feels unnecessary, because she was not antagonistic in any way. No. She was always a likable character. She was easy to get on with for both Sam and Dean. I think she's a very competent hunter. I think that they could have done a lot with her character if they had allowed her to live. Her death feels pointless, and it frustrates me. I don't think she should have died, and I also don't think Rufus should have died. I think that death was also pointless, and the thing that drives me most insane is that they killed off the one and only woman in the episode, they killed off the one and only person of colour in the episode, and also, I'm pretty sure at this point, the only recurring person of colour who wasn't already dead. And honestly, one of the only female characters who was recurring who wasn't already dead. Like,
I don't know how to tell you, you like the white man show.
Oh, it's just, I'm like, I get it. We have talked about this before, but the problem is partially because we have had to talk about this before.
Yeah.
Like, this should not be a recurring complaint that we have. Like, there are plenty of things that we recurrently complain about that I'm like, yeah, fine. Like, the lighting, sure, you know, or the CGI or whatever. Like, sure, those are fine things to be like, oh, la, la, la.
If they're bad, it doesn't really matter really all that much.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it's not great. Like, you want the quality of the show to be high.
Yeah, but it's also, like, the kind of thing that will age and be like, okay, yes, technology has progressed. We can see why this CGI does not hold up the way that CGI looks now. But stuff like the recurrent and unnecessary killing off of minority characters is just, I've had enough.
You know what? You're wrong. There is still one reoccurring female character that's not dead yet.
I mean, I didn't say there wasn't any, but she's one of the few. Because, like, Lisa's not dead, you know? No. Like,
but you're missing the most important one. Actually, she is kind of dead. Jenny the vampire.
Oh, fuck off. Because I thought you were going to say Meg. And I was going to be like, okay, well, she's, one, died before. Multiple times, actually.
I mean, Meg too. But, like, clearly Jenny the vampire is the highlight.
Yeah.
Though she is also technically dead.
This is the thing. I don't think we have to devote a lot of time to talking about why it is wrong, because I think, one, it's fucking obvious, and two, we have had to talk about this before, and it feels like we're just going over and over the same thing. So I do think it's worth highlighting, I do think it's worth talking about, but I don't think we have anything new to add to the discussion we haven't already said. So I just wanted to point out,
big gags.
I dislike it, and particularly I dislike it because not only are these characters women and people of colour, but they're also characters that are so likable and had so much potential and were killed off for no good fucking reason. I understand a death being plot relevant or the natural conclusion of a character's arc. I understand a good narrative death. I know at the moment there's some division in the Our Flag Means Death community about a certain death that happened in towards the end of season 2. I personally think that narratively that was a sound conclusion. I personally didn't take issue with that particular death. I know some people were really hurt by it, and I'm not saying that's not valid. I'm just saying from a narrative storyline perspective and a character perspective, I think that that was a very natural conclusion for that character and for the arcs surrounding that character. These deaths, comparatively, were for nothing but shock value, if that, because they barely even devote time to the fact that these characters have died outside of the immediate scenes where they did.
I think, honestly, the reason why Gwen died is because they needed to demonstrate that, like, someone was infected with the monster bug thing. And they were like, okay, well, what's the most expendable character?
Yeah.
And it was Gwen. Like, logistically, it sucks that the female character was the most expendable character. Like, that's fucking stupid.
And by that, like, I know what you mean, but just, like, to clarify, like, she was the least developed. She was the least plot relevant.
Yeah. So if you kill Samuel there, you lose all of that thing. You obviously can't kill Bobby, Sam, or Dean, which leaves you with either Samuel, Gwen, or Rufus.
Yeah.
And I think because we know Rufus so much better than we know Gwen, they wanted to keep Rufus for, like, the second death of the episode so that it's a bit more impactful.
For the third death, actually. Samuel dies for him. But
he's already dead. It doesn't count.
But, yeah, so it's really unfortunate. And of all the Campbells, like, obviously Mary aside, because, like, she doesn't really count within this context, she's the only fucking one I like. Oh, and Deanna. You know, Deanna and Mary I like. And I couldn't give less of a shit about the rest of them.
Technically, both Sam and Dean are Campbells as well.
Okay, well, I like them. But you know what I mean? Like, of the Campbells as they're presented, they don't really present Mary and Deanna as part of them because they're not part of the resurrected crew or, like, the cousins, right? So, of the people that we have in season 6, I could not give a shake of a rat's ass about anyone except Gwen. She's the only character that I feel like we get any sort of empathy from. Mm-hmm. I think she's maybe one of the only characters that we get any real interaction between her and the brothers that isn't just, like, open derision. So it's a real shame to me that she doesn't get any more.
I think she's the only Campbell that I wouldn't have cared if they survived.
Yeah, I kind of would have preferred it if she did, purely because, like, I think she would have been a good, like, once-off recurrence kind of character to bring in every now and again. She would have been a good one to be like, oh, like, I got a text from Gwen.
Yeah. And it's also the sort of thing where they're technically cousins, so the female fan base wouldn't get really shitty about having a female character in the vicinity of the brothers.
Yeah, which is more a commentary, like, on, like, the time in which it was being released. But, yeah, so, like, she's immediately ruled out as a love interest.
Yeah.
So,
though, I mean,
how quickly would they have set her up with gas? Anyway, sorry. He's set up with Meg currently, so... Mm-hmm. I think that it would have been really interesting for them to have let her live. I think that it maybe is an unfortunate side effect of, like, the Kripke mentality of, like, there can be no broader scope community outside of Sam and Dean. Because that was
and
also,
Bobby. Bobby is the one, like, the one bitch they just can't manage to kill. Which is so funny considering Bobby was, like, as far as I know, was meant to be, like, a 3-episode character max.
Every single fucking time they try and purposefully introduce a character for, like, 1 to 3 episode arcs, they end up being Bobby or Cass or Crowley, or, like, and they end up being so integral fan favorites. Yeah, and then when they try and do something, like, with the Campbells, and everyone's like, nah, we hate them fuckers, give us something good. But yes, no, I think that this episode particularly was, like, we talk a lot about the pivot from season 3 and season 4. I think that this point, or, like, actually, you know, sort of mid season 6, was the point where they went, oh shit, the whole thing we're doing with the Campbells is not going down well with, like, viewership. No one's interested. No one gives a shit.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to X-nay that and we're going to pivot again. Because, yeah, they just straight up just kill everyone off. And there's no real reason for them to do that except that they kind of left themselves in this situation where, like, if the characters were alive, they had to be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially the way that Dean and Samuel left off. Like, they were just sort of an ever-present threat.
That's the thing, like, they can kind of leave alive characters who are allies, but as soon as you're an enemy, it's like they don't really want to leave that loose end there, because that would mean that they have, you know, continuity in their storyline. You know, it's Supernatural.
Just the Antichrist. Yeah.
This episode, like, I am just really glad that they did get rid of the Campbells. I understand that they didn't really have to kill Gwenoth, but, like, obviously they figured for the sake of it, they had to.
Yeah, I think you're right. Kind
of stupid, but, like...
I think you're right in saying, like, logistically she was the only choice. The only other thing they could have done was bring in another, like, introduce a whole other character for the purpose of killing them, and we would have also shat on that, so...
I just want to say, like, I understand why they made the choice to kill Gwen. Mm-hmm. It's shit that the way they had set it up meant that she was the only choice for who could die. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like...
like, the fact that she was the least developed character, the fact that she had the least plot relevance, like, at a baseline.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, Rufus.
Oh, Rufus.
I fucking love Rufus.
Can I ask, does Rufus ever get, like, does he make another appearance again? Okay.
This is his death. I did actually Google, because I was like, there are definitely other episodes with Rufus in them, and I just wanted to double check and see, like, if it was flashbacks. A resurrection-y thing or a flashback-y thing. So, we get flashbacks and stuff. With more Rufus, particularly there's an episode I'm thinking in season 7 where we get a bit of Rufus. We get some in, like, later seasons. I think I've mentioned to you, I can't remember if it was on the pod or off the pod, about an episode where we sort of get to see Rufus and Bobby working a case that Sam and Dean are also working in a different time period. So, like, we definitely have the actor and the character back. It's just that this is his, like, official quote-unquote death, which is...
so if we see him again, he's dead, basically.
If we see him again, it's, like, in a memory.
He's not going to be resurrected, like, 50 times sort of character.
Unfortunately not.
Which fucking sucks. They make these good characters, and then they're like, what if we just kill them off real quick?
It's really upsetting. And, like, Rufus is just such a fun fucking... like, he has lines this week. Like, he's like, it's not rocket surgery. And I'm like, I love you. Like, and I know that you know that's not the correct quote. I know that you're, like, butchering them both on purpose. I love that you're just taking them and mashing them together. He reminds me of Dean. He reminds me of Grumpy Dean, like, old man, like, I've had enough, you know. I really love him, and he's such a good hunter. And, like, we get in this episode, like, the backstory of how Bobby and Rufus actually knew each other, and Rufus was the hunter that, like, essentially rescued Bobby when he first encountered the supernatural. We get that he sort of taught him everything he knew when they worked together. And we also get something that drives me fucking mental, and I want to get your thoughts on it, because I think that it might be irritating for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
Omaha.
Yeah.
This is the only information we ever get about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you.
Bethany.
Yeah.
I lived with the Parker blowing up her family home flashback.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. Okay. Here's the thing. I detest information being brought up and having a point made of it for no fucking reason. It drives me up the wall. Because Rufus dies at the end of this episode. No, like, the emotional resonance of the whole Omaha conversation, I don't know why they wasted airtime on it. Because it achieves nothing. It amounts to nothing. We get no real growth from either character. We don't actually know what happened in Omaha because it's very, like, ooh, vague and, like, whatever. Which I understand. But I'm also like, what did it achieve? I don't know if I'm fundamentally missing something. But it just feels like you just did this thing for no good reason. And I would like a point. Do you know what I mean?
Feel like we've heard about Omaha before.
Have we?
Like, obviously I can't quote, like, an exact... but, like, I swear to God, I don't know if they say Omaha specifically, but you definitely get the information that something happened between...
oh, we know that something happened with Rufus and Bobby.
Yeah.
Because there's the whole thing where, like, Dean first goes to see him and he brings him the Johnny Walker and he does the whole, like, Bobby sent me and Rufus, like, slams the door or pulls the gun or whatever he does.
Yeah.
But then, like, Dean pulls out the bottle and that's what gets him inside. So we knew that they had beef, but, like, it just seems silly to me. It seems like, why would you bother bringing it up? It has no purpose. It just feels like they're trying to add tension, but I can't figure out why. Like, there was nothing wrong with the silly, fun, ha-ha banter they were having.
It's just so weird hearing you be like, but there wasn't enough ha-ha banter.
No, it's not that. I'm just saying, like, this show is so serious. And, like, everything else that was happening in this episode is so serious and so, like, intense. And Rufus is the levity in this episode.
Yeah.
He has so many of the, like, one-liners and, like, you know, the bits that give you that brief relief from the tenseness of the rest of the episode. And so to then add tension into his scenes where it's just not really necessary feels silly. Him and Bobby's dynamic is the only point of levity in the 40 minutes of television. So to remove that, it just kind of leaves you with nowhere to go. Like, it just means that you have only one emotion, and that is just tension throughout.
because I personally didn't see it that way, which is weird. I don't know. I feel like it makes sense that, like, obviously they're setting up Rufus to die this episode, which fucking sucks. But I think it makes sense to finally address kind of like the elephant in the room this week, because I think it's the first time where it's been like really real that one of them might die. And it's kind of that thing of like, before you die, you want to like kind of put all your cards on the table. Like, you want to,
I guess so,
do like your bullshit before you do.
I understand that, but like, you saying it's the elephant in the room, like, I don't feel like it's ever been portrayed as them having an elephant in the room. Do you know what, like, if you think about, like, Weekend at Bobby's and, like, the other episodes where we've seen Rufus, like, there's not, like, there's been any weird underlying tension. There's been no, like, I'm still mad at you for this thing that you did, and then they never explained it. Like, I think the thing that drives me most crazy is that it comes out of nowhere, and it is never, like, there is never any kind of resolution. They just introduce it for seemingly no reason, and then it has no point. Because if they'd introduced it, and then, like, three or four episodes later, there'd been, like, a narrative point to it, not a problem at all. But the fact that they bring it out of sort of seemingly nowhere and then they just never do anything with it because they knew they were going to kill him off that same episode just seems kind of silly to me.
So I just didn't think it'd come out of nowhere. Like, and you know me, like, normally I'm like, Supernatural pulls shit out of nowhere all the time. But, like, I thought, like, between the fact that the introduction to Rufus strongly suggests that he's not happy with Bobby, it's kind of like what we've been seeing is that whole thing of not forgiving, forgetting, but still moving on. You know what I mean? Like, and that's kind of what we'd gotten. So it was now at the point where, like, Bobby's still trying to be forgiven for whatever he did in Omaha, whereas Rufus is like, well, I've moved on, but, like, I'm not going to forgive. Like,
okay, interesting. I'm glad you phrased it like that. Do we then think it is maybe a Dean-Sam parallel? Because Dean has his whole thing this episode where they're standing it once they've buried Rufus, and he's doing the thing where he's, like, putting it out there, you know, when all said and done, like, I'm dead or whatever, automatically you all are forgiven. Yeah. Like, for whatever transgressions you've done, just understand you're forgiven. Because I feel like him and Sam are having a similar issue right now where Dean's moved on, but Sam doesn't even remember what he did.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like Dean has truly forgiven Sam.
Yeah.
And we had that earlier in the season where, you know, there was a lot of discussion about we're working together now and, like, blank slate, but, like, Dean didn't actually trust Sam. So do you think that maybe it's more a parallel?
It could very definitely be intended to be an intentional parallel between Bobby Rufus, Sam Dean. Replace Omaha with Detroit. Like,
okay, no, I like that interpretation.
You know what I mean? So that's at least how I saw it, as, like, you know, maybe the tension wasn't really there, but it's also something that's been really heavily weighing on Bobby. Because it's like he understands that, like, Rufus has moved on, but that he's still not forgiven. Like, it will never go back to the way that it was. And, like, you got to remember, like, the way that Rufus and Bobby describe their relationship is, like, they were really good friends for a really long time, and then suddenly they weren't. And also, Bobby's just not the sort of character who takes, you know, someone getting killed on his watch really lightly, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, the implication...
He's no John Winchester.
Which is further exemplified in this episode with the quote, well, somebody had to. When,
oh my god, yeah, so you got the, like, guy pretending to be their dad? Yeah.
It's like, well, to be fair, John didn't even bother to pretend, so... You can't blame Bobby for that.
No, and actually, like, one note that I did have, just quickly to finish off the thing about Bobby and Rufus, is that while it has always kind of confused me, I do think that it serves to show how complex relationships within the hunting community can be. Because it is such a small community that everyone does kind of know each other, except apparently Sam and Dean. But because it is a small community, and because it is such a high-risk, high-stakes community, the likelihood of people having various altercations is really high, or, like, people feeling like someone else is responsible for someone's death, you know, or injury, or however, whatever, higher statistics, you know, than just general life. But yes, I do love Samuel trying to call Bobby out and Bobby absolutely turning it back on him. It's incredible.
I do want to say it's time for my PSA of the day, Bethany. What do you think it is?
I actually have a solid guess.
You have a solid guess this week.
Yeah, and I'm
just going to go out on a limb and say I don't think you've gotten it, because I think I've got a niche one this week for you.
All right. Well, then I probably got it wrong, but mine is specific to me.
Okay.
So have you seen my Nutribullet cord?
Yes. I literally made the note. I'm going to read it to you verbatim. Let me just find it. You and the fucking blender.
Sorry. For everyone listening who hasn't seen my Nutribullet cord, It does not look dissimilar to the court that Rufus bullies Bobby about in this episode.
For the cranial saw, yeah, no.
Where he says, what did you dumpster dive for this? And all the wires are exposed and it's incredibly dangerous. The way that Naomi tried to bully me into buying a new NutriBullet and then proceeded to show every single one of our friends whenever they came over the state of the court. And to the point one of our friends wrote to do in a whiteboard marker on our fridge and then put number one, throw out NutriBullet. And it's still sitting there because we haven't wiped it off. But I refuse because I just don't put it near water or metal and I make sure that I don't touch the wire and it's fine.
Perfectly safe. Everyone knows this.
Look, my PSA, guess, is electrical safety.
Yeah.
And that you should not follow my example and you should replace your cords when they have exposed wires or at least cover them with electrical tape, which is something that I've been meaning to do for the last 3 years and just haven't. So that was my guess.
Okay.
Electricity safety, basically.
Electricity safety. That's okay. It is not.
Yeah, you said it's PSA. Niche, so I bet.
My PSA is niche. It is throwing shrimp on the barbie is basically a hate crime to Australians.
Oh my
no
god.
No one does that. That's really offensive to us personally. Maybe don't do that. Just have a think about it before you spread
misinformation.
Stereotypes and misinformation.
I wrote fry up a little shrimp on the barbie and then I just wrote stop in all caps. The thing that I think drives me most insane about people saying shrimp on the barbie is that we don't call them fucking shrimp.
Yeah.
Like, that's a bloody prawn. I will fight about this. Shrimp are the little tiny guys that you put in fried rice. Prawns are the big juicy fellas you put on the barbecue if you put them on the barbecue. Because I don't think I have ever met a person who's actually ever cooked prawns on the fucking barbecue. I don't know if it's just me. But, like, the barbie is snags, chops, skewers.
In case you haven't remembered recently, me and Bethany are in fact Australian.
And we're passionate about the appropriate things to put on a barbecue.
And it's not goddamn shrimp.
No. If you're putting shrimp on the barbie, you're an idiot.
Yeah. Like, what is...
Or, I assume, travelling.
Yeah.
I don't know where this got started either.
It was from a tourism ad that Paul Hogan did.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Have you never seen the tourism ad?
No, I have never understood where the fuck this... I was kind of under the impression that maybe it was one of those, like, phrases or something that you say to, like, get into an accent. Do you know what I mean?
Do you want to watch it now with me?
Sure.
Okay.
That's horrible.
So that is the origin of throw another shrimp on the barbie.
That is so funny.
I think there is another version of it where he actually does say the line, throw another shrimp on the barbie.
That is...
Yeah.
Horrific.
But it's from a line of tourism ads filmed by Paul Hogan for Tourism Australia in, like, the mid-80s. The reason why it really got picked up in America is because all of these tourism ads were shown
in America.
So then they got this perception. But no, so they were filmed right after Crocodile Dundee and was a massive international hit.
Huh.
So they used Paul Hogan as a tourism ambassador for Australia. I'm assuming you'll cut out most of that. But
well, I'll cut out the ad.
Cut out the ad. But if you haven't recently, just Google, like, Paul Hogan, Tourism Australia.
If you haven't recently. Sorry.
I don't know what people are doing. Oh, no. Do you expect me to be a mind reader? They're classic ads. People must be watching them all the time.
I love this idea that it's like, oh, yeah, nah, that ad's in my most recent search history.
Well, it is now.
Anyway, I did not know that that was the origin of that, so thank you. I've learned something today. It's so funny. We so rarely get mentions of Australia in this show or in American media, just, like, generally. And when we do, it is always the most annoying ones.
We got an Australian shout-out in the form of a line that's not really Australian.
It's so funny because you can't even blame them because it was from an Australian tourism ad.
Exactly. Like, that's the worst thing. It's, like, betrayal...
Yeah,
from,
like,
our
it's like, we made our bed and now we have to lie in it. Anywho. Did you have any other notes specifically you wanted to talk about? Anything to do with any of our characters or the plots? We obviously the plot is changing a little bit this episode. Mm. Actually, I had a note that says, I love that the previously on is actually just reminding us that there is a plot this season because I feel like it's been so long.
It's fine.
There is so much happening this season because obviously, like, things weren't working and they were shifting it up and whatnot. I think, honestly, this season, the concept of it was just really ambitious. They were trying to set up so many things. I think to start season six off as, like, with a bang, I guess.
Yeah.
To be like, we're still fresh and hip and interesting. And
remember this show that exists?
Yeah, and it just wasn't working for them, so then they had to cut out the least popular plot lines. And so I thought it was funny that the previous Eon was just like, hey, remember that there's a plot happening? But you forgot about that. So
overarching plot who?
Exactly. So did you have any particular places you wanted to go?
Oh, not really. Like, it's a bit of an episode, isn't it?
It is. Oh, actually, I do have one more Australianism. Mm-hmm. So you know how when Eve... Oh, we get Eve. We should talk about Eve.
Yep.
But when she rocks up at the truck stop mm-hmm. and she's, like, standing in front of the guy and he, like, specifically looks at her feet and notices she's not wearing shoes. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's what tips him off that, like, something's not right there. Literally, I was like, no one wears shoes. People wear shoes. But, like, mm-hmm. it is not that uncommon to see people walking around not wearing shoes.
Especially if you're, like, at the beach or something. Like,
well, like, I mean, the beach is one thing.
Yeah.
I was like, that would not be a tip off. Like, if I just saw someone out and about not wearing shoes, I'd be like, yeah.
So Australians are inherently more bogan is what I'm getting from this. Like,
yeah, I think we just care about shoes less.
Like, what's the purpose of shoes anyway?
That's the vibe I'm getting. Like, I've seen people in Woolies just straight up no shoes, you know?
Yeah.
But also in saying that, like, I've been at the beach. I've walked through a chemist, no shoes, fully just in a sopping wet bikini.
Like, no shoes, like, no shirt, no service doesn't work in
Australia. Does not apply. Yeah.
Wearing thongs and that to, like, a nice restaurant. It's not common, but it's not as uncommon as you think it is. It depends
on where you are.
Like,
it...
Sometimes the vibes just say you've got to wear thongs to the fancy restaurant, right?
But yeah, so I was like, that would not be a tip off here. It would just be like, oh yeah, she's not wearing shoes at the petrol station.
Though I do want to say, and this is really notable for us, because I think this is the first ever example we've got of a man very specifically yes. not being stupid or horny.
He is not looking to take advantage of this young woman. He is looking to help her out and, like, you know, he doesn't need to be pushing his religion onto her, but that's a whole other topic. Like, he just... seems like a genuinely, generally nice person. And that is a nice change up.
Yeah. I was actually really surprised because I was like, I watched this and I was like, oh, like that opening scene reminds me a lot.
Of the pilot?
Of the pilot. Yeah. And like the woman white in dress. White. Like that whole thing. I was like, oh, are we getting like a second woman in white this week? Mm. No, we didn't. But I also do appreciate it is like a little bit of a callback and it does feel like a little bit like a re sort of start of the plot line and a restart of the narrative and a bit of a like, this is a nice reset point of like, we're now mirroring the pilot. It's kind of like the story starting again.
Do you know what I actually really, really like about that concept that you've just brought up? Is that this is literally Eve. Like, she's literally referred to as the mother of all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because the woman in white is obviously a mother and the whole point is that she has killed her children in her grief, right?
Yeah.
And Eve, in this narrative, is out here talking about how her children were abandoned by their father, but, like, she would never abandon her children. She would never harm her children. It's interesting to talk about that as a contrast, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, in looking at Mary as well as a matriarch, like, mm-hmm. we talked about how she in the pilot was depicted as this stereotypical, like, idea of motherhood in the long white nightgown, and then obviously the woman in white in the long white nightgown and stuff. And so, like, yeah, as a comparison, even, like, visually, the actresses they chose for the woman in white and now for Eve, look, are very similar in appearance.
Yeah, they don't look dissimilar at all.
No, really. They could be siblings.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's really interesting. Do you have any thoughts, feelings, predictions surrounding Eve and the mother of all and that whole sort of scenario?
I love her. I thought obviously. You might.
She is an evil woman, so what do you think the chances are of Sam falling in love with her at some point?
Here's the thing. I think she knows she could do better.
Iconic.
Like,
so Sam's going to be thirsting after her and she's going to be like,
Perhaps not, Bags. Like, I am really excited. I do love a female villain. You know this. Like,
I know this.
This is just something you have to accept about me.
Uh-huh. Really, I know it and I love it.
But it is the sort of thing where it is really very interesting to see, like, we're getting the female villain and, like, the matriarch and even the idea of, like, we get the line this episode from Samuel and he's like, remember, you were named after me. I'm like, okay, weird flex. Weird flex, but okay. But even the idea of, like, they have been betrayed by any biologically related father figures to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I say biologically specifically because Bobby has yet to let them down. But, like, you know, Samuel's now let them down. John, obviously, is just a constant letdown. Mm-hmm. Like, rest in hell, John.
I literally have a note that says, God, if Mary could see her son threatening to murder her father because of a problem her husband caused.
Like,
and then literally later in the episode, I think Sam says, like, what would Mum say? And I was like, LMAO, I literally was just thinking about that.
Like, but But no, so it's really interesting to kind of see the contrast between, like, yeah, the whole point is like, oh, she's a mother and she loves her children and she loves her children more than God loves his.
Mm-hmm.
And God's a deadbeat dad. And, like, we've already evidenced
it's this. It's a continuation of this narrative. Do you have any thoughts on where the plot might be going in this sort of sense?
I think that it will be the sort of thing that it comes out and it's really quite intertwined with the whole, like, heaven sort of civil war situation.
Okay.
Because I just don't think this is the sort of thing that you can do in isolation. Like,
yeah.
I think that partially it will tie back into the whole, like, civil war in heaven sort of thing. Because, like, as much as Eve is not, like, you know, an angel, Eve is also one of the first beings created by God. And, like, if that doesn't factor into what the angels are doing, then I don't know what they're doing with the season and who dropped the ball there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Though it's supernatural, so it's anyone's guess, really.
It's hard at the minute because, like I said before, they had so many plots running and they clearly just started culling them. So I think that it's tricky to, you know, specifically pinpoint this is what's going to happen because, like, there are so many threads to pick out. Eventually it'll all sort of come together in a cohesive sort of sense. It's just going to take
as much as Supernatural ever comes together in a cohesive sort of sense.
I did want to mention the goo. We talked about the goo before.
The gooby-gooing this week.
The gooby-gooing. And I do want to just quickly touch on it because we've talked before about Sarah Gamble has a weird, like, for some reason, goo just sort of seems recurrent through a lot of her sort of overarching plot specifically. Like, season 7, that's going to make a hell of a lot more sense. There's a lot of goo that season. You know,
it's a gooey boy. What can I say?
The line we get this episode is, we're goo positive, and I just think that's really funny.
Yeah.
But also, the, like, scene later on in the episode where they're all, like, simultaneously sticking both fingers in their ears is so funny. They're all just, like, standing there, like, it's wide shot, and it's just these four grown men just, like, awkwardly twisting their fingers in their ears, checking for goo. So funny. You know what? Funny.
It's giving Leverage the office job when Sophie's like, any finger will do. I like the pinky. Just stick it in your partner's ear. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Also, thinking about the electrocution.
Yeah.
They're, like, electrocuting each other, right, to see if where this worm thing is. I want to make a quick note that Sam is insane and I love him. Number one, for suggesting electrocuting each other just for funsies. And two, doing it to himself.
I want to say,
psychotic.
Don't kink shame the man. That's really rude of you, Bethany, specifically. Come on.
This is not a kink shame. I just think he straight up just zaps himself. I'm like, you are a lunatic and I love you. He's crazy. Sam is at his best when he's a little bit beyond it. A little bit psychotic. Yeah. Like, and it's great. He's at his peak when he's crazy and making odd decisions. I also love Rufus being like, I've got a bloody pacemaker. And then also, is when Bobby's like, when did that happen? He's like, oh, don't worry about it. Also, I'm down three toes. I think that's so funny. I want to know, did he lose all three simultaneously? Is it three next to each other? Or is it just three separate incidents where he lost one toe each time? You know, like, I'm curious about this. Unfortunately, obviously, we never know. And then number three.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Bobby is the one who is being possessed, I suppose, by the monster. And so when it's time for him to be electrocuted, he, like, starts, like, backing away. Like, he's acting like everything's fine, but he's, like, backing away. And Rufus is like, well, then stop bloody moving, Bobby. The way that somehow Jim Beaver managed to perfectly emulate my dog at the vet. I don't know how. He was channeling Arlo so perfectly. It was so funny. I was like, this is literally Arlo. It doesn't matter what they're trying to do. They're trying to listen to his chest with, like, the little stethoscope, trying to give him a shot, trying to, like, whatever they are doing. He is like, I will reverse away from you and I will act like everything's fine, but I am absolutely not going to stand still or let you get behind me. It's exactly constant right.
Constant vigilance.
Yeah, even the look on his face, I was like, why do you have my dog's exact expression?
Considering this episode has a lot in it,
mm-hmm.
it was kind of boring, like, not gonna lie.
Yeah, this, like, was not one that I was like, oh my god, yeah, we're up to this episode. I literally forgot what happened in this episode like three times. I kept having to look it up.
Which, I mean, is something, isn't it? Like, it is just a sign of the quality of the media if you fully forget what happens. And not just in any episode, but in an episode that's, like, I would argue this episode's actually probably pretty pivotal for, like, the plot line, like, the actual overarching storyline, at least of one of their plots.
I think The only thing of real consequence that happens, like, if you skipped this episode, you could work out the plot stuff from watching another episode. You know, like, it's not like you're given this huge piece of information that... It's not like we find out about the demon blood reveal in this episode and then the next one wouldn't make any fucking sense. I think that the most consequential things that happen is the death of the Campbells and the death of Rufus. Mm-hmm. Because Rufus is a character we don't see that often, if you missed this episode and you didn't know he was dead, as unfortunate as that death is, it would not change the plot. It would not change your understanding of the characters moving forward. And same goes for Gwen. She is not a character that, like, if she had never appeared again, we would have been like, wow, whatever happened to Gwen? Like, in any serious way, it would have just been like, oh, like, she just never was used in another episode. The only person who you kind of need to know is off the board is Samuel. And outside of that, like, outside of the deaths that piss me off, there's really only one that's actually consequential to the plot of the show. Yeah. And that is Samuel's. And outside of that, this episode is so just, like, whatever.
The suspense sort of mode is an interesting...
It's a whodunit.
Yeah, almost. But it's, like, also kind of, like, very boring. Like, and that is just the kind of the long and short of it. They try to do something, and I think they achieved in some regards, but in other regards, it's, like, it's just not the sort of supernatural episode that's actually that interesting.
I'm looking through my notes now, and I honestly think that we have really already covered most of it, and, like, we've literally been talking for, like, 48 minutes, and that's not a lot of time. Like, when we have episodes where we can easily talk for 2 hours,
yeah,
like, inconsequential. And even just looking through my notes, it's mostly actually just, like, one-liners from Rufus or, like, notes like, oh, God, I hate the hammer death, which is just true just because I don't like gore. But, like, we're not going to talk about that. That's not a discussion point. That's just I don't fucking like it. Or, you know, I think this is the longest Bobby's ever gone without wearing a hat. Haha, never mind. He has one the next scene. That's not a discussion point. That's just Bobby put a hat on. Like, and as much as I did enjoy watching Bobby in, like, this context of, like, he's actually out in the field and engaging in a hunt, like, he is, like, scrubbed up to be, like, a federal agent persona rather than just hanging out in his house, it's not really a discussionable point.
No, it's just what it is. There's a lot of things going on in this episode, but none of them are really all that interesting to talk about. There's certainly things here. Like, that's not up for debate. There's certainly things here. It's, like, the resolution of a whole bunch of things that have been happening. But it's also the things that we just don't care about. That's the thing. Like, I think this episode would be fascinating if you cared about the Campbell storyline. I don't care about the Campbell storyline.
I do actually have one question for you. Maybe one of the only things left that I think is discussionable.
Yeah.
Sam chooses to kill Samuel before confirming if he was possessed. And also before Samuel can tell him any of the things that he did that he can't remember.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I recently, well, not recently, but by the time this actually goes out, but I wrote a fanfiction for our friend KJ's birthday.
Yes. And if KJ, you haven't read it, you absolutely should.
It's also by far my most successful supernatural fanfic yet.
Well, it's because you just keep getting better and better.
It's fucking wild. But I recently wrote a fic for our friend KJ's birthday. You know them, you love them, they've been on the podcast before. They are a Sam stan. So I decided that I was going to write from Sam's point of view for KJ, specifically for their birthday. And what I realized as I was writing from Sam's point of view is he knows things, but he doesn't necessarily always understand them. So, like, he knows Samuel is possessed, but he doesn't understand that there is actually a good sort of chance that he's not. So it's like he doesn't fundamentally understand the difference between those two things. Like, he can know because he's seeing the signs, but he doesn't understand there is a good chance that his brain is just putting those signs in his own head so that he can use it as kind of like a, oh, well, I thought he was possessed, so therefore I killed him as a defensive move because he was possessed, when really he killed him as a defensive move because he did not want to hear what Samuel was going to say to him.
Yeah, so it's like rewriting the logic.
Yeah.
So it's like, your logic was, I don't want to hear what you have to say, so I'm going to prevent you from saying it, but I will reimagine it as,
yeah,
I had already figured out that you were possessed, and therefore I had no choice but to stop you before you could tell me the information I maybe don't want to hear. And I think that it's really interesting, like, Sam is at kind of war within himself over whether or not he wants to know what he's responsible for. Because on the one hand, he very clearly, like, wants to know what he did. But on the other hand, like, no, he doesn't. Because the only thing that he does know is that whatever he did was bad.
Yes.
And, like, no one wants to know that something they did was bad. No one wants to find out that their action harmed people. I think that Sam would be appalled to know his own actions.
It's the sort of thing where I think that Sam really just wants to live in kind of the denial-y space. Like, he wants to do what he wants to do without having to actually face
consequences.
Him, yeah, like, and it's not even just like external consequences, it's also consequences within himself. He does not want to have to examine what he does.
He can't feel guilty if he doesn't know what he's done.
Exactly. Like, so he's almost purposefully ignorant because it's the easiest way for him to continue to live, if that makes sense. Like, it sounds a bit batshit when I say it in those phrases, but it's like, if he can pretend that he didn't do what he did, then he doesn't have to face even his internal consequences or his own internal shame.
And Sam has always been a really interesting character when it comes to morals and guilt. We've been talking about it even since, like, season one. Like, he is very particular in what he considers to be moral or immoral. And so, like, for him, this sort of, like, internal question of morality, particularly, like, coming out of Kripke era as well, and, like, the way that everyone was sort of framing him as, like, the beginning of the apocalypse and he is a Lucifer vessel and, like, all of these things, I think that he is sort of poised to be in this very vulnerable state when considering his own sense of morality, and then to have his morals literally have been taken away from him, and then he's just, like, gone and done all the shit. Like, I don't know, like, I guess it kind of comes back to, like, Death's whole warning being, like, if he knows everything that happened, like, if he gets his memories back, yes, it's just his memories of what he did. To be fair, with this, it's also, like, the memories of hell.
Remember, when he was alone in the cage with Michael and Lucifer, and absolutely no one else was there. It was just Sam and Michael and Lucifer, okay? Just absolutely no one else.
There was Adam definitely who, not a fourth person there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God, Adam and Eve. Wow.
I was about to say, like, I'm actually kind of sad that we don't have Adam anymore, because I think it'd be really fun if they had done something with the whole, like, Adam and Eve and, like, parallel sort of thing between...
This is the, like, most vague spoiler of all time, so I don't mind. We actually do get Adam of Adam fame, like, Adam of Adam and Eve. Like, I'm pretty sure he's season 15. We get Adam of Adam and Eve.
It's so funny to me that we get Adam of Adam and Eve, but we don't get it in the season where we get Eve of Adam and Eve. You'd think it would be the sort of thing, it's like if you're going to do, like, Cain and Abel, like, you do Cain and Abel together. You don't do Cain one season, then Abel seven seasons later, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, that's so funny.
I know, we don't even get Abel, but, like...
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, you know what I mean? It's like, if you're talking about famous pairings in the Bible...
Let me tell you why the fact that you use that as an example is so funny. It's because the reason that it's insane that we don't have Abel of Cain and Abel, and it's insane that we don't have Eve of Adam and Eve, is for the same insane reason. And we'll get to it. Like, the thematic reasons why we don't have them with their traditional counterpart, the parallels they do with it, Jamie, you wouldn't fucking believe. Anyway.
That is so wild to me that they're like, yeah, we're going to do Adam and we're going to do Eve. We're going to do Eve in season 7. And
season then six, even.
Sorry, season 6, and then we're going to do Adam in season 15. That's, like, the totally logical, like...
To be fair, I don't know that they ever make this explicitly abundantly clear. Because they've called her the mother of all and they've also called her Eve, I don't know that she is actually Eve of Adam and Eve. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't actually know that she was the first human woman. Like, I think that she...
Chose the name
Eve. Potentially the name is more like... thematic. Like, the name is symbolic rather
you know
than
what's
actually.
So funny though, because what? The name Lilith would actually have been more fitting.
You're
here.
So right,
except
but they
for
already used
blew,
it.
They've already blew it. They've already used it in, like, seasons 1 through 5, so they couldn't do Lilith.
That's
because
so funny.
Lilith actually is thematically a better fit for the mother of all, because Bible stuff, it's definitely the sort of thing where, like, Lilith would have been a better thematic fit for, like, the mother of all plotline, but they've fully already blown that.
That's so funny.
They've already used it. They've already given up Lilith of Lilith fame. You know what
Lilith
I mean?
Lilith fame?
Yeah, see, like, that's the thing. Like, when you're iconic enough, you stand by yourself. You know what I mean? Like,
but yeah, so there are some insane takes for later days. But no, so definitely the mother of all plot is sort of, like, picking up. And I mean, to be fair, we're in the back half of the season now. We're over halfway through.
You hope the plot is picking up.
I'm pretty sure we've got 6 episodes left of this season, because I'm pretty sure there's 22. Yeah, actually, you know, we're coming up to sort of the end of the season. Do you have any thoughts like, obviously they've got a lot of plots going on, but do you have any thoughts about how and when they might start addressing those? Just because I feel like this actual episode doesn't have a lot more else for us to touch on.
It's really hard because I feel like the first season had a more clear-cut sort of, like, narrative place they were going with it, if that makes sense. Like, this second season seems a bit more aimless. It feels a lot more like just throwing shit at the wall. And, like, that's saying something.
Sorry, I assume by second season you mean second era.
Second era, you know what I mean? Like, the second showrunner, blah, 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 blah. Sorry. Because you can kind of count Kripke era as, like, one big season.
They run into each other very
effectively. So it kind of feels like, I don't know, it feels a little bit more like trying to throw shit at the wall. And see what sticks, which is a really interesting considering, like, season 1 through 5 very much felt like them just sort of throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks. It might just be kind of like a supernatural thing. It feels like as a show, they adapt a lot more than like other shows that I've watched previously. Like, it feels like a little bit less clear cut, you know, exactly what they were aiming to do, you know?
So it's just like, it's kind of hard to...
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to actually like predict what they're trying to do with this season just simply because it feels like they don't really know what they're trying to do. Like, it feels like they were like, okay, well, we want to do all of this. So they did all of this. And then they were like, okay, well, as the season goes by, we're going to just kind of weed out the storylines that don't really seem to be either going somewhere interesting or popular with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels a little less like, oh, well, I'm doing this and I don't give a shit if it doesn't make sense. This is what I'm doing. And more like, if we just give them a whole bunch of things, see what they like, and then cull the rest. So it's like, it's really hard because I don't know what fandom perception was at the time. I feel like if I knew what was not popular in the fandom at the time, I would have a better chance of being able to pick what they're going to hold on to and what's going to sort of fall to the wayside. It feels like the Campbells were definitely not popular, so they've let it fall to the wayside. Just based on my own opinions and what I know of the fandom, I think the Balthazar plotline is going to come back again. Because I feel like Balthazar just feels like he was a fan favorite character.
Balthazar, to me, as a character, always felt like an amalgamation of both Crowley and Gabriel.
Yeah.
And those are both crowd favorites. Yeah. So it makes sense that Balthazar is also a crowd favorite. Like, yeah. And he definitely is. Actually, there was a poll that went around Tumblr recently that was asking the favorite angel. And bear with me because I voted for Zachariah on your behalf. Oh,
Zachy boy!
Yeah, I did. On your behalf, I voted. Because I was like, no one else is going to vote for Zachariah, and I can't send this to Jamie. So I voted on your behalf. And honestly, I probably would have voted because it was outside of Cass. They were like, other than Cass, because like, obvious sweep.
Not allowed to do Cass sweep, unfortunately. They have banned that.
Let me see if I can find it. Anyway, but they have like Anna and Gabriel and all these. I think when I voted, Gabriel was winning.
Mm-hmm.
Balthazar was pretty high up there as well, like, if I remember correctly. But like, they always had like Uriel and Zach, and you know, a couple of angels you haven't met. There's an angel called Hester. It's so funny. She has made such a lasting impact on the fandom. Her significance to the plot is like nil, but she has like one crucial, very, very Destiel heavy line, and so she has become so notable for her contributions to the community. But like, you know, so it was really interesting. But yes, I did vote for Zachy Boy for you,
and I'm on it. Back to what I was actually saying,
sorry, I sidetracked us entirely.
It feels like Balthazar and the whole war in heaven plotline is going to come up a bit more. I'm sort of two minds. Like, either Cass wins and that creates complications, or Raphael wins and that causes complications.
Yeah,
I'm not sure which way I'm quite leaning yet. It feels almost like maybe it's going to be like Castiel wins sort of thing, and that provides tension into the next season because, of course, if Castiel wins, then he's going to be in heaven a lot more often. You know, Destiel angst that they've got to capitalize on.
I have a question for you before we move on from this point. As Cass has told us, like, we know the consequences that if Raphael wins, he wants to restart the apocalypse and sort of undo all the work they did diverting it in the first place, right? So we know those consequences. If Cass wins, outside of the Destiel pining, because, like, that's not what the showrunners were. Like, that wasn't the plot, you know? At least not yet. Give him another 10 seasons, we'll get there. Or another 7 seasons, we'll get there. But what do you think, like, if Cass wins, like you said, the consequences or whatever, like, what would those be?
I just think it's the sort of thing where even if Cass wins, just because he's won doesn't mean that everything's okay.
Yeah,
okay. If that makes sense. Like, yes, he doesn't want the apocalypse to happen. That's great. We love that for our baby boy Cass. He doesn't want the apocalypse. That's good. All the other angels still want the apocalypse. So it's like, well, not all the, but there is a large portion.
There's a large faction.
There's a large faction of the angels. So even if Cass manages to wrestle control of heaven away
from Raphael,
there's still a large faction of angels who are still going to be actively trying to undermine Cass, if that makes sense. Like, there is all those sort of implications there.
So it's not just about getting power, it's about holding it.
I feel like if Raphael wins, it's the sort of thing where he's going to do whatever he can to strip Cass of being a threat.
Yeah.
But I know Cass doesn't die because Misha Collins is unkillable. So even if he does die, even if Cass does die, it's not going to be permanent.
At least not yet.
I do, in fact, know that he does appear in the 15th season of this goddamn show.
Maybe he's a ghost.
I don't think that works with angels. Somehow, like, that's just not how I think it works. So I think it's the sort of thing of if Raphael does win, then he's going to be stripping Cass of power any way he can.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that is a temporary death or if he, like, you know, just strips him of his angel mojo and he's, like, human. Like, I think we briefly got, was it the end of season 5 where we briefly get, like, kind of half adjacent human Cass?
Yeah, he's basically cut off from heaven. Yeah. It's the precursor to where he would have ended up 5 before the end scenario. Yeah.
I feel like they're either going to have Castiel be in more danger because he won, or Raphael wins, and then, you know, Raphael is not going to lead.
He's not just going to let him get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's now the leader of the opposition party. Like,
yeah, sure.
But it's a dictatorship, so, you know, the leader of the opposition party has to be, you know, like, you can't just let them run around sowing ideas of dissent.
Because they're a threat. Yeah, yeah.
Because they're a threat. At this point, the apocalypse severely dwindled their numbers.
Literally just getting Dean out of hell dwindled their numbers. Fucked their numbers.
Plus all of the skirmishing they were doing with demons left, right, and center during the apocalypse. Even if it was just, like, for show or whatever. Any angels that have died through the Civil War situation, like, they're not going to be able to restart the apocalypse without all the angels on board. Like, they've got to enforce their power somehow. And having Cass remain alive does not do well for, or at least remaining alive in the sense of, like, politically alive.
Do you know what is really, really interesting? Is, like, I'm listening to you describe this sort of idea of Cass as, like, this sowing the seeds of dissent. And it is giving Katniss energy. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't about Katniss.
Yeah.
It was about what she represented to the rebellion.
Yeah.
And, like, that's literally what you're giving right now.
Cass has shown that he could exercise free will.
Yeah.
And just Cass living, exercising free will,
is a threat.
Without consequences, is a threat.
Yeah.
Considering the entire whole point of the angels is they, you know, they're marble statues. They don't feel anything. They're emotionless. They follow orders. And that's it.
And he's, like, the antithesis of that.
And if he's not there, emotionless, marble statue, following orders down to the letter.
He breaks the mold.
He breaks the mold. Then if one person can break the mold, it's suddenly a lot easier for everyone else to break the mold. So that is not something that Raphael wants running around in his heaven.
Okay.
And then I think Crowley's going to make a big gay comeback.
Do you have any thoughts about where Crowley ties into it all?
Not specifically.
I mean, at this point, he's dead. Yeah, but, like, I would love to hear your thoughts.
But at this point, it's a bit like Misha Collins. You can't kill Mark Shepard. You know,
fundamentally, like, unkillable.
I feel like, you know, Mark Shepard has a similar sort of armor that Misha Collins has, where the fandom just love them and their characters so much that if they try to kill them off for too long, uproar. You know, we can't just write them off the show.
It's like casual work. Yeah. We can't fire them, but if we just stop giving them very many shifts, eventually they'll just quit. Yeah. And that kind of feels like how Misha has been treated so far in Gamble era. Not gonna lie. Like, we'll just cut back his shifts and eventually he'll decide to leave.
Eventually he'll decide to move on. Unfortunately for them, Misha Collins is unwell.
There was something in the water on that set that made every single actor unwell.
I definitely think we'll see more of Balthazar before the end of the season. I definitely think we're going to get a resolution to the whole angelic civil war thing. And I think there are two ways they can go still at this point. Like, it's kind of still anyone's game. There's no clear winner of who's going to come out
on top.
On top. I don't think it's going to be like, surprise, secret, third contender that you've
got. Balthazar.
Balthazar's now the leader of Helven, because, like, I think
of Helven.
Of Helven.
The combined.
Yeah. Well, King of Hell's dead now, too. They might be going for a combined, you
know. I love
this idea that, like, it's a duopoly, but it's about to become a monopoly.
Yeah. That's where purgatory comes in, because they need purgatory to be able to combine the two. Because that's, like, the middle space. If they're going to, you know, knock down the wall between heaven and hell, they have to have...
The corridor in between the two. The corridor
between the two is purgatory, so you have to control purgatory to be able to knock down the wall.
That's a whole other thing we haven't talked about, because purgatory is part of the plot. It's been brought up now.
Yeah.
So, like, do you have thoughts about what's going on there?
And, like, we've also got the reveal of the character that Crowley was searching for. But no, so you've got that entire plotline going on too. And see what I mean? It just feels like they were throwing so much shit at the wall, and they didn't really know what they were doing at this stage. They were just, like, trying to gauge audience reaction and then pick up what was most popular with fans.
Yeah, it literally, like, is a game of pick-up sticks, where they just dropped all of them on the ground and it was a big mess, and then they were like, okay, we'll strategically pick up the ones that we want to get the most points.
Yeah.
Like, that's genuinely how it feels as a season. What I think they do really, really well is by the end of the season...
They picked up the correct sticks and made a picture.
They picked up the correct sticks, but they also pick up the sticks in a way that makes it feel like they didn't just drop a bunch of shit on the floor to start with. They do it in a way where it's like, oh... It does all actually make sense. And I do think that the rewatchability of this season is higher for that reason. Yeah. And what it does mean as well is because by the end of that time they've narrowed it down, it means going into season 7, we have a much more streamlined idea of what the plot is, who the, like, antagonists are, and what's actually going to happen going forward through the second half of Gamble Era.
Season 6 feels like seasons 1 to 3 combined. Whereas season 7 is 4 and 5.
You're not wrong.
What it took Kripke 3 seasons to do, Sarah Gamble did in 1.
Efficiency, efficiency, efficiency.
Does that make sense? It kind of feels like if you took all of the plot from seasons 1 to 3 and shoved them into a single season, I bet you it would feel like...
It's literally just the inverse. Like, instead of dad's missing, it's grandpa's back.
What's next? Mom's back?
Instead of Sam having visions, it's Sam has no memory.
Like, the exact opposite. Sam knows exactly what's going to happen. Sam has no fucking idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, and it's literally, what else can we say? Instead of Dean going to hell, what's the antithesis of that? What's the season 6 version of that?
Dean had a full-ass family?
Yeah, okay, So instead of Dean goes to hell, as Dean went into suburbia. Literally, Dean didn't get pulled out of hell, Dean got pulled out of suburbia. Like it's literally just the exact opposite of the first 3 seasons of Crack Era.
If we, instead of having 3 seasons... For that first plot-lining bit of the Kripke era.
Yeah.
I think it would have felt a lot like season 6. It would have felt like, oh, they've just...
Throwing stuff on the ground.
I think it's just really interesting that, you know, like, Sarah Gamble didn't draw it out the same way that it had historically been drawn out.
Yeah, and that's also partway, like, the transition into single season plot lines.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing. Like, the structure of the other eras is inherently different to that of Kripke because, like, there are plots that span the eras... But anyway, we should probably wrap up from that. Did you have any other thoughts about sort of where we are at this point? Because I think that this is actually maybe the last time I can really ask you before we get into some more, like, specific...
Plot reveals.
Because we are coming up to the sort of pointy end of the season. Now, like, we're episode 16. Within the next couple of episodes, we're going to start hitting some that you will have heard the titles of.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to start hitting some plot reveals. We're going to start hitting some bigger things. And so I think this is maybe the last natural place I can ask you before you get significantly more information.
I feel like I've let down the team, though. I haven't really, like this one, I just feel like there's less for me to theorize about. I think it's more subtly handled, the plot build-up.
It is also more convoluted, which means that you're distracted by lots of different things.
Though I wouldn't be surprised if we get to the end of the season and we find out that Crowley's fully not dead. He just faked his death because he didn't feel like dealing with this bullshit anymore.
That's so funny. Like, it's his version of, like, Gabriel being like, I went into witness protection.
Or even, like, Balthazar being like, I died in battle, and then just going, like, to the song. You know what I mean? Like,
literally all the angels are just like, what if I faked my own death, though? Like, what if I just didn't want to deal with it?
I feel like Cass is the only one who hasn't really faked his own death of, like, the major angels we get so far. Because even Anna, like, before we meet Anna, has, like, kind of half done that in terms of, like,
she went into witness protection.
She ripped out her grace and become a human. Like,
it's like all of the outlying angels literally just went into witness protection. protection.
Yeah.
The closest Cass goes to witness protection is just being friends with the Winchesters.
Yeah.
Like, by default, he's kind of in witness protection. Not in the sense that, like, he is being hidden, but just in the sense that they will fuck you up if you try and come for him. He has bodyguards, in a sense.
It's less in a, I faked my death and went into witness protection, and more in a...
It's more like, I got actually more famous, but now I have better protection.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think partially it's because it is actually just a more convoluted part of the series, and that makes it harder to pinpoint the specific plot threads and actually, like,
I feel like I can go on half of the plot threads, like...
Fair and valid. And, like, that's what I said, like, the opener for this episode literally felt like, oh yeah, that plot. You know, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And next episode, I'll tell you right now, is, like, a different plot line we're focusing on. And so it's very sort of messy in that sense. But also, because of the writer's strike that has just ended,
mm-hmm.
oh my goodness, at time of recording, this is the first episode we have done since
the writer's strike.
We got the announcement.
Yeah.
Very exciting. We get to start releasing all of our stuff, and one of the first things we're about to release is going to be your thoughts on the finale and the season 5 thoughts and going into season 6. And one of the things that you brought up, because I've just gone and edited the episode now that we can release it, was that you were talking about, like, Sam being soulless, because it was one of your theories. You were like, I know that this is a plot line at some point.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember talking about it, because it was weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks before we got the actual reveal, but you did bring that up in that episode. You were like, oh, I feel like... I know that Sam hasn't got a soul, or at least there's a joke that he hasn't got a soul at some point, and, like, this feels like it could be relevant because, like, maybe it's in hell, like, maybe, you know, his soul didn't quite, you know. And I was like, Jesus fuck, Jamie, can I catch a fucking break? And so, like, there is stuff that you've, you know, brought up. Yeah. I just think that it might be a case of we haven't noticed anything you've predicted coming true, purely because we haven't been editing our episodes. So
we also haven't been, recording on as strict of a schedule as we normally would record.
Yeah, like, we have had weeks between episodes in some cases, and, like, that just typically hasn't happened before in, you know, the 2.5 years we've been doing. Anyway, that's a little bit of podcaster...
Behind the curtainsy stuff.
Behind the curtainsy production stuff.
But, I keep on trying to predict things. This season just feels... harder to predict.
You're also trying to predict a new showrunner.
Yeah.
Is the other thing, because, like, you kind of got used to Kripke's style, and now you're getting used to Gamble's. And she's a different showrunner. She's a different person with a different, like, you know, style of doing things.
The one thing you can always reliably predict about her is she will shove Cast to the Beast storyline if she has to have him in an episode.
It's very interesting. I'm really fascinated to see what you think about the last 6 episodes of this season. I think it is going to be very fun. I'm looking forward to season 7, actually. Specifically the last couple episodes of this season, and then into season 7, I'm fascinated to see your thoughts. Anywho, we've gotten really off track.
We have.
But that's okay. I had a bunch of stuff that I was going to mention about this episode, but it's all just, like, silly things, so I don't think I'm going to really bother. It's basically any time that Rufus opened his mouth this episode, I loved it.
Iconic.
If you've watched the episode... Everything that Rufus said, just Bethany liked that, you know? I like seeing Bobby actually active in a hunt, which I think I mentioned briefly before. I like that when Samuel calls Bobby kid, I quite liked that interaction because it was like, yeah, Samuel actually is older than Bobby, and it's like a really fun dynamic. I like Bobby's little smirk, like, as a reaction.
But also because Samuel's been dead for so long, he doesn't look significantly older
exactly.
than Bobby.
Like,
either.
They're sort of the same age, but also not. And so I really like that little interaction, and I like that Bobby's, like, reaction to it. I think it's weird that Dean's name is just D in Sam's phone. That seems weird. Like, what's he trying to do? Protect his identity? Doesn't make any fucking sense.
Everyone knows they're fully codependent at this stage. Like, if you know Sam, you know Dean.
If,
like,
you know who Sam is well enough to, like, steal his phone and break into his contact list, you know Dean. So having it in there as D doesn't make any fucking sense. If you put him in there as, like, Brady, sure. I also want to make a quick note that the fucking shot where there's, like, a synchronized movement of torches as Sam, Dean, Bobby, and Rufus all slowly follow, like, the course of this trip line as it goes across the floor and up the wall and to the ceiling and to the booby trap. And it's a good 30-second shot. And it goes all the way up and then cuts to all of them moving in sync. And it's so fucking ridiculous. It's so silly and so unnecessary. And I just think it's dumb. Other than that, I love that Bobby obviously has a cranial sore in his car at all times.
It's giving Gina Linetti. Of course I keep a hairdryer in my purse. What am I, an animal?
Yes. And the only other thing I really wanted to quickly touch on is that they spend so much fucking time talking about family in this episode. And obviously, like, the concept of family is, like, very thematic throughout all of Supernatural, mm-hmm. but just particularly this episode, like, I swear to God, if you played a game of, like, take a shot every time they said the word family, you would end up with your head in the toilet. Like, they say the word family fucking 30 times throughout this episode, I swear to God. And it was interesting because, you know, at one point we get Dean saying, just because your blood doesn't make you family, like, you've got to earn that. And I think that that is true and consistent with his character. It sort of is in line with what we've talked about before. But also, I just think that there's this, like, back and forth this episode about, like, you know, we're blood or we're family. And it's just, like, I feel like there's, like, a weird mismatch between who is considering what to be family. And, like, I feel like there's a bit of flip-flopping between, like, you know, you'd feed your own blood to ghouls, you know, is something that Dean accuses of Samuel, essentially. But then at the same time, he's saying, but you're not family because you haven't earned family. So it's kind of like, it's a two-way street, pal. It's
either,
like,
you're family or you're not. Make a decision there, buddy.
Like, and it feels kind of flip-floppy throughout all of the characters and throughout all of the scenarios. It's like, okay, do you consider each other family or do you not? Is it based in blood or is it not? Like, you have to actually decide.
Like, you can't just keep on being like, family, not family. Like, either you define family as someone related by blood or by someone that you just care deeply for. Like,
yeah, and I think that it sort of, like, it's one of those things where it's like, if you just keep saying the word family over and over and over again, it's kind of like, I feel like it loses its potency. You know, I would consider you my family, but if I just said to someone on the street that I considered them my family, I feel like that shifts, you know, it makes it a less exclusive term, you know? And so I feel like that kind of applies here too. Like, if you're just going to say someone's like,
I'm sure you're family with anyone that you start a Supernatural podcast with, they're about me.
You know what I mean? For me, it just feels like a term that should be reserved for, like, very specific people and scenarios seems like it's being used very loosely and then being condemned for being used loosely, but then also being used in a way like an argument of, like, in a loose argument as well. And it's just, it feels like weird.
It feels like they're making choices and I'm not sure why they're making these choices because they didn't have to. Like, yes. There's no reason for them to be making these choices.
Like, that just feels like Supernatural.
They could have made literally any other choice and it would have been fine.
Yeah, I think that's basically all that I wanted to say. I don't know if you had any other points. I still got some, but I just really can't be bothered.
I don't think it's going to be a surprise that my rating's going to be pretty low this week.
All right, well, let's just go straight into it then. Yeah. What was your rating?
My rating this week is, like, 2.5. As an episode, it's, like, it's not the worst episode of Supernatural I've ever seen.
It's just boring.
To be fair, the bar is really low, but it's just kind of boring. Like, the only thing that I really like about this episode is the fact that, like, the Campbell plot is very clearly over.
And Eve is cool. And then, like, the only things of consequence outside of that is that they kill some characters unnecessarily in a really shitty way. So it's like, yeah, no, 2.5, I agree. Like, it's mid at best.
And, like, I understand that it's kind of like, well, you've got to, you know, sacrifice some characters sometimes, but it's like, it's your own fault that you set up these characters as the characters that logically had to die.
But, I mean, to be fair, cultural lens, different time. We are looking at it like an episode that came out well over a decade ago.
Yeah.
And the cultural shift has been just enormous. Not to defend it, but, like, you know, for context's sake.
Yeah.
Like, it is important to recognize that there has been a significant cultural shift. Anywho, the next episode is titled My Heart Will Go On. Feelings, hopes, dreams.
I have a feeling that it's going to be Titanic themed.
Like, so funny. Why would you say that?
There are a few songs in this world that have such strong cultural connotations as My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. But Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On is the Titanic song. I understand that you did other things with your career. However, you can't go back on it now. Unfortunately, you are the My Heart Will Go On Titanic lady now. Like, in the brains of millions of people, it is just the Titanic song.
Outside of Celine Dion and Titanic, do you have any other thoughts about what it could be regarding Supernatural?
I feel like next week we're going to get some batshit shit.
We're going to get some what?
Batshit shit. I feel like maybe there was something on the Titanic when it sunk. And now they have to try and go and recover the thing. Or maybe...
So it's getting real hard of the ocean.
Either that or, like, maybe it's, like, people are getting killed at sea when they, like, sail over.
Like Bermuda Triangle.
Bermuda Triangle. Siren type. Like, ghosts of the ocean from the Titanic sort of thing. Or maybe it's going to be, like, one of those, like, Well, you thought the Titanic sunk because of an iceberg. Well, actually, it's because there was a super duper evil sea monster there that sunk it.
Oh my god, the Kraken.
The Kraken! Yeah, exactly.
The Loch Ness Monster.
Hey, the Loch Ness Monster, good old Nessie, does not get out of Scotland. So it's not her
Maybe
fault.
They relocated her to Scotland, and that's actually... They were like, it's too dangerous to leave her in the open waters.
Super duper secret, like, supernatural hunter society has now relocated the Loch Ness Monster to Scotland.
The way that could actually be a canon plot is so absurd. Anyway, do you have any other thoughts?
No, I think I'm going to leave it there. I think my predictions are golden, so...
Alright, do you think we'll get cast next episode?
I don't think so. Like, it doesn't feel like we're quite ready to bounce back to the Angel plotline yet. And,
okay.
You know, Sarah Gamble's not letting Misha Collins on her set unless it's a dire emergency. And by dire emergency...
Viewership is down.
I mean that the viewership numbers have dropped.
Get Misha on the set now. In that case, that just about does it for today's episode. Hopefully you have had just as much fun listening as we have had recording. If you wanted to get in touch with us outside of listening to us waffle on in ears for a couple of hours every week, you can always find us on any of our social medias, all of the links for which will be in the description below, and the possible suggestions for conversation could include...
How did you feel about the candles? They're now dead.
Yeah, if you liked them...
Tell me why. I don't understand it, but...
Here's the thing. I think that they could have had potential. I just think that they, when they were introduced in the first couple episodes, I just don't think that they were given any significant personality that would make them endearing in any way.
Oh, I have a question. Because I talked about this really briefly, like, back seasons ago when we got the flashback episode where Dean went to the past and met his mum and that. Mm-hmm. And I said that John was a worse parent than Samuel. I think that still holds. I think Samuel's a dickhead, very clearly, but I do think he is actually still technically a better father than John Winchester.
Well, I mean, his whole drive, like, his motivation for doing this, like, with Crowley and stuff, like, we know, is because Crowley has told him that he can bring Mary back.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that his desperation as a parent to, like, bring back his daughter is, like, basically the opposite of, like, especially the same drive as John. Samuel is ruining his grandchildren's lives for the chance of bringing his daughter back, and John ruins those same grandchildren's lives for the chance of bringing his wife, the same person, back.
For instance, one actually has a chance of resurrecting her. The other one's like, I'm just going to avenge her.
Yeah, so actually that's the key difference. Yeah. Yeah. Like, one of them actually has, like, a vague plan about
One is motivated by love for his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
The other is motivated for hatred of the thing that killed her. Yeah. If that makes sense. Like,
and that's the difference.
And that's the difference.
And that's that on that. Anyway, if you have, like, reasons for liking Samuel Campbell, like, hit us up. Let us know. I would be interested. Because, like, you know. I'm sure there is at least someone out there who likes him.
And I think he does, in fact, manage to just barely scrape over the bar of John Winchester's parenting.
Yeah.
Just barely.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and hopefully we have you back next week for My Heart Will Go On. Bye.
It's almost like having to go, bye, like, and I, bye.
We'll do that next week.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can't wait to hear your, and I steal it back. You got to do that in the Star of Solention.
And I still are back.
Oh, you know what I fucking mean.